This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
The makers of Camel cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. One puff won't tell you.
One sniff won't tell you.
It takes day in, day out smoking to find out how mild a cigarette is, how well it agrees with your throat. Make the sensible cigarette test, the 30-day Camel mildness test, and see just how mild a cigarette can be.
Yes, and you'll find out why more people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, the Milton Berle of homicide.
Pretty bad.
Oh, hi, Helen.
What are you doing?
Playing canasta.
Who's there?
Well, just me and that Japanese beetle I found hiding in my bills.
Japanese beetle?
Yeah.
And you're playing canasta?
Well, what do you expect us to do? I'm tired. He just finished giving me my judo lesson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you believe me.
Oh, sure I do. Who's winning?
I am. He can't speak English. Besides, I make up the rules.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to see you tonight?
Well, I...
You what?
I don't know. Something just came into my office.
Client?
I don't know. Here comes another one.
One what?
Beats me, but they're pretty strange. Hey, where'd you leave your saucer, fellas? Maybe they're shills for the beetle. I'll call you back.
Bye.
Bye. Well, what can I do for... Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, that was a piece, Sal. Now, now pick him up, drag him over to the chair. Sure thing, Yuki. He is certainly very unconscious. He seems to be. See if you can revive him, Salvador. A pleasure. Would you mind holding my nuts, Yuki? I don't want I should break his jaw by accident. Ah, such a nice man. You are so considerate. I would be happy to hold your nuts for you, Salvador. Diamond. Diamond. He is very out. Well, here, Salvador, try this pitcher of water. Wait, I'll remove the gladiolus.
I felt as if I was lying in the middle of a crowded sink and someone had piled all the dishes on my head. They turned on the faucet, and I floated up with a dirty coffee cup and took a look around. I treaded water and squinted through my dewy eyelids at two of the ugliest dishwashers I had ever seen.
Look, he's twitching.
Oh.
You see, Salvador, it's just a little lazy. How do you feel, Diamond?
Oh.
Let us know when things start making sense.
What's going on? What happened?
He's confused.
Yeah. I think maybe you sapped him too hard.
Oh.
Yuki, I take that as an insult. You know how careful I am.
I apologize, Salvador.
Thank you.
Hey. How'd you monkeys get in here anyway?
Well, it sounds like he's collected most of his marbles.
Looks like a complete recovery, Yuki.
I want to know what this is all about.
Oblige the man, Salvador.
Sure.
But... keep him with us.
Naturally.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Oh.
That's enough, Salvatore. That's enough. Can you hear me, Diamond? It's going to be obstinate. I don't think he likes it. Belt him across the ears. He'll listen.
Can you hear me now, Diamond? He's nodding his head. I guess he don't want to open his mouth and let the blood out.
Oh, that's fine. Now, listen, Diamond. In a while, you'll get a call from a Mr. Wharton. He'll offer you a job, but you will not take it. Do you understand? Salvador, please, see if he understands.
He says, yeah, he understands. But now he's got a sore arm.
Remember, Mr. Wharton, you don't want to work for him.
I think he understands, Yuki.
Yeah. But he looks tired from the strain.
He certainly does. Look at those dark circles under his eyes.
Well, put the man to sleep, Salvador.
Certainly. Night.
Mr. Diamond? Mr. Diamond, can you hear me, Mr. Diamond?
Oh, this can get monotonous. Go away, will you?
Should I call the police, Mr. Diamond?
I was expecting uglier company.
Can you sit up?
Oh, I'll take a crack at it. I'll bet your name's Wharton.
Well, that's right. How did you know?
Get out of here.
Well, I want to talk to you.
Well, I just had one long conversation. It was too one-sided. Now, go on. My health is doubtful, but it's fun to have it around for company.
Maybe $500 would pick you up.
It might for a while, but I don't like to waste that kind of money on funerals.
$750.
Yes, so they line the coffin with velvet.
$1,000.
Well, you're beginning to make a short life sound practical.
If you do the job successfully, there'll be another $1,000.
You just bought yourself a corpse. Let me wash up. Talk some more. I can hear you.
Well, it's my son, Roger. He thinks he killed a man.
He thinks? What do you want me to do? Find out for sure so he can brag about it?
Ever heard of a John Alter?
Oh, sure. Walt Levinson sent him up 5 years ago on a manslaughter rap.
Well, he doesn't like it up there, and he'd like to get out.
I don't blame him. What's this got to do with your son?
I'm chairman of the parole board. Yeah. You look much better now, Mr. Diamond.
So you're chairman of the parole board?
Yes. Some of Alter's friends promised to keep quiet about my son if I let Alter go free when he comes up before the board next week.
And you think maybe your son was framed?
Yes. About a month ago, he met a girl in Florida. Her name is Lenore Brown, and she's a friend of Alter's. When Roger went to pick up the Lenore girl at her apartment, he found her struggling with some man.
That happens.
It looked like he was trying to kill her. There was a gun on the floor, and she called to Roger for help. He picked up the gun and shot the man. She told Roger he'd killed him and that he must get out. When we went back, they were both gone. About a month later, some of Alter's friends got in touch with me.
They forget about the killing if you let Alter out of Sing Sing, huh?
That's right.
Well, I don't remember reading anything about it in the papers.
You're the first one outside of Alter and his friends who knows anything about it. You see, they say they're hiding the corpus delicti, so there was no report of the murder.
You think maybe they staged the killing, put blanks in the gun, and after your son beat it, the dead man walked out under his own steam?
Well, that's what I want you to find out.
Uh-huh. The man your son thought he killed, what did he look like?
Dark man with a scar from his nose to his chin.
Mm-hmm.
If my son is innocent, I want you to bring the parties responsible to justice.
Amen.
Well, here's a check for $1,000.
Thank you.
If you find the girl and prove my son innocent, there'll be another $1,000 in your pocket.
Well, I'll sew up the holes. Thanks, Mr. Wharton. I'll start right away.
Goodbye, Mr. Diamond. You can reach me at the Wentworth Hotel. I'm staying there until this matter gets cleared up.
Well, I won't get in touch with you unless I find something. The guys who worked me over are pretty set in their ways, and there's no sense in you tripping over a lot of dead bodies. I grabbed a pack of Camels, looked at the $1,000 check, thought about the warning the two bruise artists had given me, and decided it was a toss-up. If I spent the $1,000 like I knew I would, I'd wish it was dead anyway. So I left the building, grabbed a cab for the 5th Precinct. 10 minutes later, I walked into the squad room and spotted Sergeant Otis, looking like an advertisement for a sour stomach.
Well, Richard Diamond, Private Sleuth.
Well, Sergeant Otis, Private Sloth.
Huh?
Look it up. S-L-O-T-H.
I will.
Under S.
I know.
The three-toed variety. And get your uniform pressed, won't you?
Looks like you've been hanging it in a taffy machine.
Oh. Well, hello, Rick. Hey, you must get tired changing your face every day. Somebody shove you around again?
Oh, I've been catching up on my patty cake. Tell me, Walter, do you ever know a girl named Lenore Brown?
Yeah, sure. John Alter's expense account. They used to hold hands before I sent him up.
Know where I can find her?
Alter's still got her staked out. When he gets out, he's going to come back and dig up the claim. You better forget about it. She's got the antidote for lonely nights, but some of Alter's boys are protecting it.
I know. They gave me a pep talk this afternoon.
Then listen to them. It's better watching the game from the bench.
You never can tell. I might make a score.
Well, you're outweighed, outclassed, and liable to be outlived. But she used to work at the Black Swan in Florida. We heard Alter was trying to get a parole, and she came to New York to be close to him.
Any line on her here in town?
No, but if she's seeing Alter, you might spot her on a visitor's day.
Well, Rick, how are you? It's been a long time.
I know a lot of people who wouldn't like to hear that, Warden. How are you?
Oh, fine, fine. What's on your mind?
Well, I hear Johnny Alter's been having company. I'd like to take a look at her.
Oh, Miss Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't blame you.
Well, I just want to spot her and see where she goes.
You can't miss. If she walked through the yard, there'd be a jailbreak tomorrow.
What time are visiting hours?
Well, if she's seeing Alter today, she should be downstairs right now. Like to take a look?
Uh-huh.
I'll have a guard take you down.
Good.
Well, on second thought, I'll go myself. There she is, sitting at the end table, talking to Alter.
Oh, now I know why Alter needs a lot of money. She's wearing enough mink to carpet Radio City.
You should get a load of her on a warm day.
Well, the coat doesn't stop me. She'd show up, she was wearing a tent. How long has she got with Alter?
About another 5 minutes.
Warden, you know, maybe I'll let you put me away for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
With something like that to look forward to on the visitor's day, I might go for the change.
You'd get tired of just talking.
I hung around by the big gray buildings until she came out. She walked over to a long white convertible and got in. I decided to let her buy me a new fuse, so I walked over to the car. Going into town?
Oh. Back up 3 feet and I'll let you know.
Three. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Your tailor couldn't do all of that. Get in. Visiting?
Oh, yeah. The warden's an old friend.
How many years did you know him?
Baby. I've been going home every night all my life.
Every night?
Well, almost.
What do you do with the, almost?
It depends. Everybody likes something different.
You must get tired thinking up new ideas.
Oh, I don't think much. It's more fun being surprised. Hey, what's the idea?
Surprise.
Oh, yeah. And a nickel-plated one. Look, baby, you don't have to pull a gun. If I'm getting fresh, I'll get out and walk.
You'll sit right there, Diamond.
Name dropper.
Mm-hmm.
Expecting company?
Mm-hmm. And you've met them before, honey.
Well, it's nice. I wouldn't want you to get stuck with the introduction. Hey, those your friends driving up?
It should be. Now you hold real still. They'll only shoot you this time.
When a gal's got a gun, you don't stand much of a chance unless she's got her mind on something else. This one did. And when she looked up in the rearview mirror to make sure it was her boys, I tagged her. My two playmates were just pulling up, and I jumped out of the car.
There he is, Yuki! He's slugging off. She's out cold.
Well, shoot him, Salvador! Shoot him!
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, Private Detective,
here are a few words about smoking enjoyment.
More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Yes, more people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
One reason is flavor. Camel's costly tobaccos have a rich, full flavor you won't find in any other cigarette.
Another reason is mildness, proven mildness. In a coast-to-coast test of hundreds of people who smoked only Camels for 30 days, noted throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels.
Make your own Camel 30-day test. The sensible, thorough test. Not just a sniff of the tobacco. Not just a puff of smoke. Only by day-in, day-out smoking can you discover how well a cigarette agrees with your throat.
Smoke Camels for 30 days and see how mild Camels are pack after pack, week after week. See why more people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
And now back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Salvador!
I was running through the trees then, and I could hear Salvador somewhere behind me falling all over himself. I pulled my gun and thought about waiting for him. But I had another idea. I stopped and listened.
He's around here somewhere, Suki.
Well, come on, we're spread out, Salvador.
They were somewhere behind me, and both of them were looking now. So I cut off to my left and headed back to the highway. The cars were about 100 yards down the road, and I used my last lung getting there. Lenore was still unconscious, so I climbed in the white convertible with the unconscious nylons and drove off. I'd been driving for about 15 minutes when I noticed something lying on the seat beside the still sleeping Lenore. It was her purse, and she didn't wake up when I grabbed it. Doing a rummage job at 80 miles an hour isn't easy, but there wasn't much of interest anyway, just a little black book. I needed a gimmick, so I stuck it in my pocket. I put the purse back on the seat just as she started coming around. Well, now that's it, baby. Sit up and look at the scenery.
How did you get here? Where's Yuki and Salvador?
Playing Peter Pan. Jaw hurt?
Yes, you heal.
Well, play rough and you get hurt. Where do I take you?
My apartment, I guess.
I drove her to her place on East 51st and walked her to the door. She looked at me like a fat woman eyeing a French pastry, and her mouth slipped down to her shoelaces when I gave her a peck on the cheek and left her standing with an old front doorknob in her hand. I went back to the office and took out her little black book. There were a lot of names, and some of them I knew. Yuki, and after it, likes his work. And Salvador. And after his name, has own gun. And oh, yes, yes, Richard Diamond, too. I never did figure out what the three stars were for. But three other names and addresses put me in second gear. One was in the village, another down by the East River, and the last was somewhere in Chinatown. All of them were a setup for a dead man who wanted to make himself scarce. I wanted to talk with Wharton before I started hunting, so I called him at the Wentworth.
Did you find out anything yet, Diamond?
Not yet. Look, Mr. Wharton, you said the man I was looking for was dark with a scar, hmm?
Yes, from his nose to his chin.
Well, thanks. Maybe I'll call you tomorrow.
I hope you clear this thing up in a hurry.
Well, so do I. I want to get my nerves untangled. I took the easy address first, grabbed a cab, and 30 minutes later, I was walking down the steps of a shabby little dive on the east side of Greenwich Village.
You want something, Mac?
Yeah, a pound of egg noodles. Just sweep them up off the floor. Hey, you know anyone around named Lenore?
Sure, Lenore Brown. She comes in here about once a week, listens to the kid at the piano. Now, why would a classy dame like that go out with him? He don't play the piano so good.
You ever see a guy with her? Man with a scar from his nose to his chin?
No, she always does a single.
Oh, thanks. You've been swell. I walked out, got back in the cab, and marked off Greenwich Village in the little black book. The second address, down by the East River. The night was black, and the fog had rolled in, staked out a claim all the way to the Hudson. I stopped cold, looked down at two gleaming eyes like two pieces of polished glass shining in the glare of the dim street lamp. Steady, boy, steady. Steady.
Hold it, Lucifer.
Yeah. Yeah, hold it, Lucifer.
He won't hurt you, mister, unless I tell him to.
Well, think about it for a while, will you? I'm a poor substitute for horse meat.
What do you want?
Do you know a Lenore Brown?
You a cop?
Shamus.
Beat it, Lucifer.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, pal. I couldn't hold my breath much longer.
You can come on up on the porch. You're looking for Lenore Brown, huh?
Yeah, you know her?
I met her. My wife works for her.
Is your wife in?
Yeah. Esther, come here. Some private dick wants to talk to you. She's Miss Brown's private maid.
Yes?
Your husband tells me you work for Miss Brown.
Yeah, what's she done?
She got many friends.
Man friends?
Yeah. You know a man with a scar?
Sure, I know lots of them.
What are you talking about, woman?
I meant someone who Miss Brown knows.
What did you mean by that, mister?
Look, I really don't know anybody with a scar now. You better beat it.
Yeah, get moving. And I want to talk to you, woman. Get in there.
Yes, honey.
I knew she was going to get bruised, but he looked rough enough to cut my windpipe, and I wanted some place to pour my coffee down in the morning. So I got out of there fast and headed for the last address in the little black book. The place was on one of those narrow, dark streets that looked like the inside of a grave. The sign above the door read Tangy, so I pushed open the door and went in. If I didn't find the man with the scar here, I was out on two strikes. It was a little restaurant on the bottom floor of a two-story building. A quiet waiter slipped up and showed me to a booth. He shoved a menu in my hand and disappeared before I could ask him anything. The place was empty except for an old couple sitting near the door. The waiter said something to them, and they looked quickly over at me, and then they left in a hurry. The room was completely empty now. Even the waiter had disappeared. I looked up at a flight of stairs at the far end of the room. A pair of very healthy ankles came into view, and they were holding up a pair of legs that ran my blood pressure up to 190 again. I eased my gun out and held it under the table. She turned the corner and started down toward my booth like a loose snake in a rabbit pen.
Mind if I sit down?
Well, it's your party.
Shame on you. Don't you know it's not nice to pilfer a lady's handbag? Now Lenore will have to spank.
Looks like the last address paid off.
If you're buying shrouds, it did.
Where's the guy that young Wharton was supposed to have killed?
Upstairs. But he's very unsociable. Hates long conversations.
I only need a couple of lines.
He can't even do that. He likes to keep on breathing.
The old man figures Alter framed his son. He's not going to let your boyfriend out of Sing Sing until he finds the man with a scar.
Think he can do it better than you did?
I found him.
Was it worth dying for?
I don't know. I can tell you better after I talk to him.
Mama's going to have to spank sooner than she expected. Come on in, boys.
Well, 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 look who's here. Are Mama's two big idiots out collecting blood? Where are your buckets?
He's bitter, Yuki. A peasant.
You've met Yuki and Salvador before, haven't you?
Yeah, on the end of a fist.
They want to show you the town.
I know the beat.
Well, I'll bet you've never seen it from the bottom of the East River.
No, but if you'll put on a bathing suit, I might buy the idea.
It's too bad we'll never make the beach together. I'd like to show you the sights. Boys, you'd better help Mr. Diamond out of the booth. I think he's stuck. You know how it is. Boys like to keep moving.
Sure. And so do I. I shot once and caught Yuki in the stomach, and I dumped the table over on Salvador. He grabbed like he was going to waltz with it and went down on his back. I didn't have to get up. I just shot him through the table. Lenore was out of the booth fast and running for the stairs.
Look out, Tony! Tony, look out!
I caught up with her at the foot of the stairs, and she started up. I saw him standing on the upper landing, scar and all. all, meaning gun in his hand. He missed me, but nailed her halfway up. She spun around and fell all over me. With both of us down, he was in a good spot to finish the job, but my arm hit the lower post of the staircase and swung me right into line. I just rested my elbow on the banister and let him have it. You should have kept your nose up, mister. A bad landing washes you out. Walt, I'm bushed. Tell me, did Wharton's son identify the man with the scar?
Yeah, he was the one he thought he killed.
Mm-hmm. But the old man's feeling pretty good.
Yeah, just left. He's happier than Otis on payday.
Mm. Who was the guy with the scar?
A cheap hood. Record. Name of Lucio.
Mm. The girl and Alter had him hidden out in that place so he wouldn't be seen, and
I don't think you're funny, Diamond.
What's the matter, Otis?
Yeah, what do you want, meathead?
I looked it up, the three-toed variety.
Oh?
What are you talking about?
Oh, I called him a sloth.
Yeah, a sloth. You should see the picture in the dictionary. It's an animal.
Well?
It's funny looking, with three toes on each foot.
Well?
And it's noted for its laziness. Okay, Lieutenant. Just forget it.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute.
What cigarette do you smoke, Doctor?
That question was asked of doctors in every branch of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country.
What cigarette do you smoke, Doctor?
The brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this recent nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Friends, buy your Camels the handy, thrifty way, by the carton. That way you always have Camels when you want them.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Camels deem it a privilege to send free cigarettes each week to hospitalized servicemen and veterans. This week's Camels go to Veterans Hospitals Topeka, Kansas, and Oakland, California, U.S. Army Percy Jones General Hospital, Battle Creek, Michigan, U.S. Naval Hospital, Portsmouth, Virginia. More than 194 million Camels have now been sent to servicemen, servicewomen, and veterans. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
Tonight's adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell, was written by Blake Edwards. Our director is Helen Mack. Men, for pipe smoking pleasure, get Prince Albert, the National Joy Smoke. Prince Albert's choice tobacco is rich and flavorsome. It's crimped cut for smooth, even burning, and specially treated to ensure against tongue bite. Yes, PA is America's largest selling smoking tobacco. Listen next week for another exciting transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell. This is your FBI. The official broadcast from the files of the FBI follows immediately. Stay tuned. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
Most Saturdays at this time, we spend an exciting half hour of adventure and action with America's public hero number one, Hopalong Cassidy. Well, even two-fisted cowboys take summer vacations when they can, and Hoppy is no exception. Hopalong and Topper will be back with us riding the CBS Air Trails again 10 weeks from tonight, September 22nd.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Dear Dead Days.
I stood at the window and looked down at the Saturday morning traffic. 1,000 inchworms playing follow the leader to the beach, to the mountains, to Aunt Millie's, to any place. I had time, a book. There was food in the refrigerator and a coffee cup in my hand. Across the room, there was an easy chair and cigarettes on the table beside it. The clock said it was 9:15. I hadn't shaved and I wasn't going to. It was Saturday all day, and it was mine. Let's see. Where was I? Oh, yeah, here it is. She was the most breathtaking thing he'd ever seen. She lay back on the divan, stretched, smiled languorously up at it. Oh, no. Okay. Hello.
Mr. Marlowe? Mr. Philip Marlowe?
Speaking.
You don't know me, Mr. Marlowe. My name is Phoebe Cardwell. Mrs. Phoebe Cardwell.
Yeah?
Well, I thought perhaps the name would mean something to you.
Cardwell? No, I'm afraid not.
Well, no matter. You do help people, don't you? I mean, if someone is missing, you find them.
Well, sometimes, Mrs. Cardwell. It all depends. Have you checked the police?
Oh, no, my dear, no. I wouldn't think of that.
Oh?
You see, it's Stevens, my chauffeur. Oh, well, now I mustn't mislead you. Strictly speaking, he is not my chauffeur.
But strictly speaking, he is missing.
Yes, at least he seems to be, and I don't trust phones entirely, Mr. Marlowe. I couldn't even have called you except Matilda went to her friend's. And I do need your help.
Yeah, I see.
If
well,
you could come out right away. It's most important to me. I live in Venice, Mr. Marlowe. If you drive down Sepulveda to Washington Boulevard.
Well, what do you do? Maybe I thought about my grandmother. Maybe I thought of $25 a day. I don't know. Whatever it was, I joined the inchworm anonymity that was the traffic line to the beach cities. Now, Venice is not a spot to which I normally gravitate, but there was something in Mrs. Phoebe Cardwell's distinguished old voice that told me this was not a Saturday for normalcy. The house was what used to be called a bungalow, and the ramrod little figure waiting for me in the doorway was what used to be called beautiful. Phoebe Cardwell, for all her 75 years, had worn well and knew it.
It's just possible that I didn't make myself entirely clear on the phone, Mr. Marlowe, about Stevens.
Well, he's your chauffeur and he's missing, huh?
He was my chauffeur. It seemed like a very long time ago since I've seen him. You see, after Horace died in 1948, Horace was my husband.
Oh.
After Horace died, Stevens stayed on to drive for the family who took our Pasadena house.
Mm.
Oh, he did this with my blessing, of course. Horace, rest him, left me very little, really. I say this with no malice, Mr. Marlowe. Merely to point out that for me to retain Stevens was quite out of the question.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So I moved in with my younger sister, Matilda.
Mm.
She's visiting a friend at the moment. I wouldn't want Matilda to share my concern over Stevens, and I'm sure you'll respect that.
Oh, of course, Mrs. Cardwell. Yeah,
thank you.
Now, look, so far as you know, is Stevens still driving for the family who took your house?
Oh, I'm sure he is. He must be. It's just that, well, on Thursdays, his day off, he always brought the limousine over to take me for rides and run my little errands. Oh, understand now. The Brants are fully aware of this.
That's the family he works for.
Who have my home in Pasadena.
And Stevens hasn't been to see you in some time.
In weeks. And not a word, you understand. I find it difficult to tell you precisely how I feel about this, Mr. Marlowe. Stevens is like a son to me. Perhaps he's ill or troubled. Oh, I'd want to know that. I might be able to help.
You phoned, I suppose?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say how many times. But no answer, none at all. I've a writing desk in my room, Mr. Marlowe. I'll write the Pasadena address and phone number for you. My number, too. Oh, I shan't be a moment now.
I'd seen the ring when I first sat down opposite her.
First, because it was big, almost massive, on a tiny right hand. Then because it didn't fit the rest of the lavender and old lace picture that she presented. A mass of jade and gold carved with oriental figures. A foreboding thing that reeked quality of its kind and value. After she left, the vases jumped out at me from the mantle. Small, gold, and jade again. And as incongruously out of place as Phoebe Cardwell and Sister Matilda's bungalow.
There. Now, that didn't take long, did it?
Oh, not long at all.
Oh, I like you, Mr. Marlowe. You'll find Stevens for me, I know.
Well, I hope so, Mrs. Cardwell. And if I do, what'll I tell him?
That I want to see him or hear from him. Stevens will understand.
Yeah, well, I...
Oh, dear. Huh? That's Matilda.
Phoebe, I'm home, dearie.
So I see, my dear. Mr. Marlowe, may I present my sister, Miss Reed?
Miss Reed?
With an eye like Wallace Reed. I'm sure, Mr. Marlowe... Oh, but maybe you don't remember Wally.
Well, I tell
Matilda dabbled in theatricals at one time, Mr. Marlowe.
Dabbled in theatricals? I was in pictures in the golden era, Mr. Marlowe, when silence was golden.
Oh, that Wallace Reed, yeah.
Mr. Marlowe's in insurance, my dear, and some younger than we are.
Did you see the covered wagon, Ernest Torrance? I had a big scene with him on the prairie, right by one of the wagon wheels.
No, not first run. I'm waiting for it to come to my neighborhood theater. Matilda was a doll, real-life Cupid doll, but her role in this thing was strictly comedy relief. The drama, if there was any, was Phoebe Cardwell, a missing chauffeur that wasn't hers anymore, and the glaring memory of jade and gold that didn't seem to fit anywhere. Well, I missed the house on Orange Grove Avenue by two numbers, parked the car, and walked back. The old Cardwell place was set well back from the street, and its solid red brick looked big, important, and empty.
Nobody home.
Hmm?
Nobody home.
At first I thought there were three honey-colored Afghans on the lawn next door. But the one in the middle was talking to me. And as I walked closer, I could see she was by far the prettiest. And undoubtedly something more than man's best friend.
The Brants are at Emerald Bay for the summer. I thought I'd told everyone.
Yeah, well, I'm the one who forgot to ask you. My name's Marlowe.
I'm Kip Harcourt. Margaret, really. Kip's for the reserve section.
Hello, Kip.
I've never seen you before.
Yeah, well, believe me, I'm sorry.
I believe you, Marlowe.
Yeah, I got a first name.
I like Marlowe.
Oh.
Forget about the Brants. Come on and play on this side of the hedge.
I don't know the Pasadena rules.
Same as Texas.
Oh. Looks like we're going to have to move over.
I'll give Stevens a raise for this.
Thought you said nobody was home.
Stevens doesn't count.
He does with me. Don't move. I want to remember you like this always.
You'll be back, Mario?
This you know. Hey, Stevens. Stevens, wait a minute. I'd like to see you.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to talk to you about Mrs. Cardwell.
Is something wrong, sir?
Oh, no. She's fine. I'm Philip Marlowe, Stevens. Is there some place we can have a visit?
We're upstairs over the garage in my quarters, sir. Mm. Come along. Mrs. Cardwell isn't ailing, she said.
Oh, no, looked fine when I left it less than an hour ago.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Here we are. Come inside, sir.
Hey, nice place you've got here, Stevens.
It's a bit stuffy in here, I'm afraid. I've been closed up a few days.
Oh.
There now. Sit down, sir.
Thanks. Say, Stevens, Mrs. Cardwell misses you, and you can drop the sir with me. Marlowe will do, huh?
Well, I'll try, sir. Mr. Marlowe. But a habit of 20 years or so, you know.
Sure.
Now, Mrs. Cardwell misses me? Is that what you've come to tell me?
Well, that's about all she told me, Stevens. I understand you skipped a few of your regular Thursday visits with her, and, well, she's concerned about you.
Well, I must say that's generous of her. Of course, it's not been a few visits at all, Mr. Marlowe. I've missed the last two Thursdays, and for a quite legitimate reason. My employers, the Brants, have opened their Emerald Bay place.
Yeah, so Kip told me. Miss Harcourt, I mean.
Mrs. Harcourt, sir.
Oh, really? That's too bad.
Is it, sir?
Yeah. Well, look, Mrs. Cardwell seems like a nice old lady. You know what you mean to her. It's not just you she misses, you understand? It's a way of life, something she was part of and enjoyed. Status, I think they call it. You know, it can be pretty important, Stevens.
I understand that, sir.
Sure you do. You'll give her a break, I know. Call her now that you're back in town. You know, keep in touch, huh?
Yes, I... Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Don't leave, sir, please. There's something I'd like to ask you.
Stevens seemed like a right guy. Anyway, I was wondering about Kip, Mrs. Harcourt. I had her figured all right, but not for married. I dismissed her to the back of my mind and started casing Stephen's little palace. It was nice enough in the brown to gray motif, neat, tidy, like Stephen's, except for a bunch of packing boxes grouped in the corner behind the divan. And on top of them, three items that stopped me cold. A large bowl, a smaller one, and a long oblong box. All a mass of jade and gold carved with oriental figures.
You admire oriental art, Mr. Marlowe?
Not specially. Do you, Stevens?
Not specially, sir.
You said you'd like to ask me something.
Yes, and if I may, sir, I'd appreciate a straight answer.
All my answers are straight, Stevens. It's my questions that get tricky.
I'll remember that, sir. Are you certain you've told me everything Mrs. Cardwell said about me?
Very certain.
Does it strike you as odd, sir, that she'd hire a man of your particular capabilities to deliver the simple message that she misses me?
Matter of fact, it does, Stevens. Strikes me as very odd. I couldn't tell Stevens anymore because I didn't know anymore. It was my turn to ask questions, but I didn't have any yet. I was closing in on a pretty good one as I started down the drive again, but it got lost in the shuffle.
I knew you'd be back, Marlowe.
You always arrive unannounced, don't you, Mrs. Harcourt?
Henry's in Balboa. You're here.
Henry's out of his mind.
Don't you want a drink or something?
Yes, Kip. There is something I want.
Well, come on.
At the moment, a telephone.
Come on anyway. You know, Marlowe, you're an odd one.
Yeah, everybody says so, yeah.
You're really coming into the house to use the phone, aren't you?
Well, like I said, I'm an odd one, yeah. Where is it?
To the right in the library.
Thanks.
Are you a friend of Stevens?
Why?
Because you're not a friend of the Brants.
Yeah, well, I'm really a friend of Mrs. Cardwell's.
Phoebe's? Why didn't you say so?
Would it have mattered?
Well, little. I lived next door to Phoebe and Horace for years.
Here?
Here. It's my house. Henry married my money. Poor Phoebe. Horace didn't leave her a thing. No one understood it. Leans against the estate as big as a house.
Big as the Cardwell house?
That's how the Brants got it.
Mm-hmm.
Is she still interested in art, or do you know?
Oh, I think so, only on maybe not such big scale.
Beautiful wings she donated to the museum. I guess she never gets over here anymore.
No, not much. Say, you know, I forgot the name of that museum. She mentioned it.
Live Oak Museum on California Street.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Phoebe. Tell her Kip says hi when you see her.
Yeah, I will.
You still want to use the phone, Marlowe?
I used the phone. I called Phoebe Cardwell, explained Stephen's absence, and gave her Kip's best. And the case was closed. All I had to do was wait for a check. But all of a sudden, I didn't feel very good about any of it. It was like a hangover. You know, I felt something should make sense, but nothing did. The jade and gold at Phoebe's, the stuff in Stephen's quarters that looked just like it. Was it hers? Did she give it to him? Did he take it? Questions I had, but no answers. I stood there at the window in Kip's library and watched a car pull to a stop in front of the old Cardwell place. Watched a thick little man get out and start to walk up the gravel driveway. I wasn't sure until he walked right past the library window. Then I knew I had the beginnings of all the answers. The thick little man was Fritzy Ott, one of the better fencers around town. And he was on his way to see Stevens. A minute later, Kip told me of empty servants' quarters over her garage. Another minute later, and I was there. The two garages weren't 6 feet apart. And there was lots to hear if you listened. I listened.
But look, Stevie boy, you don't have it all.
That's not quite the point now. Can you dispose of it?
I don't know. Two things, Stevie boy. One, collections are tough to fence. Real tough. Two, this isn't the whole deal.
I don't understand.
But this isn't the whole deal. Some pieces missing. I've seen pictures of the Cinque collection. Some pieces are missing here.
Two vases and a ring, to be exact.
Yeah, you're right. You got them?
Not exactly. I might be able to get them.
Look, I'm trying to tell you, Stevie boy. One, I'm not even sure I can fence the whole collection. But two, I ain't got a prayer of doing it if it's incomplete. Are you with me there? Do you understand that?
Yes, I understand it. It might take time to obtain the other pieces.
Then you better spend some time, Stevie boy, or we got no arrangement whatsoever. I tell you, I'll nose around, see what's the best deal I can get, providing you deliver the full treatment. You see what you can do about getting it, and we'll meet here tomorrow at noon.
But I really don't think it. Oh, never mind. I've got to have the money. All right. Tomorrow at noon.
You didn't have to hang any signs on it. It was all there. Most of it was. The Sing Coo collection meant very little to me, but it meant money to Stevens and Fritzy Ott. I had an idea it meant something else again to Phoebe Caldwell. And I had another idea. The Live Oak Museum on California Street and the wing that Phoebe had donated to it. I couldn't risk the delay of a Texas rules bout with Kip, so I skirted the house and ran through the dusk to my car. 5 minutes later, I stood in front of the words Live Oak Museum, Percival Wallace director, open to visitors 9 to 5 weekdays, 9 to 12 Saturdays, 12 to 5 Sunday afternoon. Oh, nuts.
Not interested in art, eh, Mr. Marlowe?
We've done that bit, Stevens. My answer was not specially.
I dislike dissuading you in this manner, sir, but I'm a quite accurate shot.
You know, I believe that, Stevens.
If I can't persuade you with this warning, I'll not hesitate to use this gun. I'll not hesitate at all, sir.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, now that vacation time is here, our streets and highways are more crowded than ever. Don't take chances. Obey the traffic rules and drive carefully. The life you save may be your own. And now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Dear Dead Days.
Stevens had a dominant personality for a chauffeur. He could give orders as well as take them. And I'm not a man who's at his best staring down the nose of an automatic. Well, we told each other a very proper good evening, and he left me with my thoughts, which were several and urgent. I bundled them together and headed for the Times office in downtown L.A. Note, there's just one thing mustier than an old newspaper file. It's the man who files it.
1948 was a big year, news-wise, Philip. The files are heavy.
Well, how was it obituary-wise, Belden? That should lighten it.
Uh-huh. Local, national, or international?
Local, Pasadena.
Name, address?
Horace Caldwell, Orange Grove Avenue.
Uh-huh. Caldwell, Horace.
That's it.
January 30, 1948. Page 1, part 2. That's a good spot, page 1, part 2. Best local obit spot in the paper.
Oh, I'll bet Horace was proud like anything. Oh. Let's see here. Gandhi. Here it is.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Caldwell is survived by his wife, Phoebe Reed Caldwell, at home. Period. Nothing. Hey, Belden, you got one for her?
Her?
Phoebe Caldwell.
When'd she go?
She hasn't.
She's somebody.
Caldwell, Mrs. Horace, parenthesis, Phoebe Reed, close parenthesis, Triad Belden.
All right. She could be more. She'll never make part 2, page 1 at this rate.
Yeah, that's too bad, but read it anyway, huh?
Born Waterloo, Iowa, June 7th, 1876. She's Gemini, Philip.
That's wonderful. Will you just read?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Married Horace Caldwell, so-and-so, moved California. James, so-and-so. Oh, chairman of Art and Culture Committee, Live Oak Museum, Pasadena.
That's it. Go ahead.
Traveled extensively all over the world. Brought back many valuable paintings and objects d'art.
Yeah, it's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. To the museum. Most famous of which is Sing Woo collection of jade. And that's about it, Philip.
I love you, Belden. Thanks. So Phoebe had brought the Singwoo Jade collection to Live Oak Museum in the first place. Now she had some of it, Stevens had more. And Fritzy Ott was even now nosing around for a taker. Where did that leave the museum? Nowhere, so far as I knew. Except closed till noon tomorrow, Sunday. And noon tomorrow, Sunday, would be too late. Fritzy and Stevens would be together by that time. Note, Percival Wallace is a quiet little man who doesn't like to talk to private eyes about museum business at home. Or anywhere.
The museum has operated for 30 years, Mr. Marlowe, and not one shred of notoriety. Not one shred.
Well, I think we can keep the record clean, Mr. Wallace. All I want to know is when the Sing Woo collection was stolen from the museum.
I didn't say it was stolen. I said we no longer had it.
Okay, you no longer have it. How long have you no longer had it?
Well, it was since Christmas week, 1947.
Would you notify the police?
Certainly not.
Why?
Mr. Marlowe, I tried to tell you, not one shred of notoriety in 30 years.
Yeah, but it's a valuable collection and it's missing.
The board of directors did subscribe to a reward, Mr. Marlowe. Only a fraction of the Sing Woo's real worth, of course. A mere $20,000. But, of course, this was done very quietly. Very quietly.
So quietly, nobody knows about it. All right, tell me, did Mrs. Caldwell contribute to the reward?
I don't recall.
And you wouldn't say if she did. Thanks, Mr. Wallace. You're just downright bully. I got the Phoebe Caldwell small bungalow in Venice in time to see a liveried limousine pull away from the curb. A few minutes after it got lost with the rest of the inchworms, the light-up-at-night variety, Mrs. Caldwell ushered me into the living room. When she turned on the lights, everything in the room jumped out at me again. The pink dogs, the blue cats, the souvenir pillows. But the most notable things in the room were the jade and gold vases that were gone from the mantel, and the jade and gold ring that was missing from Phoebe Caldwell's old hand.
This is delightful, Mr. Marlowe. Genuinely delightful.
Yeah, well, I was afraid it might be a little too late to call.
Oh, ordinarily, yes. Oh, but not tonight. Why, you just missed him, Stevens. He came back and took me for a drive. I just this minute got home.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh, thanks to you, Mr. Marlowe. I'm so grateful. He hadn't forgotten about me, you know. No, he'd been busy.
Oh, sure, yeah. I bet he has.
I'm embarrassed not to have mentioned it sooner, but I have your money for you, your fee.
Oh, there's no hurry, honey. In fact, I've done so little that I...
No, I won't hear that. I'll pay you in full, of course.
All right. Say, this morning I was admiring your ring in the vases on the mantel.
Were you indeed?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. They're quite nice, you know.
Yes, they were. Did you give them to Stevens, Mrs. Caldwell?
I beg your pardon?
Did you give them to Stevens?
Why, really, Mr. Marlowe, you surprise me. That is none of your affair, you know.
I'm a curious fellow.
I secured your services to perform a specific task. You've done that. I certainly do not intend to discuss Stevens or anything pertaining to him with you, Mr. Marlowe.
All right. We'll leave it that way, huh?
Not a word of any of this to Matilda now.
Right.
Phoebe, dear. Oh, and Mr. Marlowe again.
Yeah, I was just leaving.
I told the girls at the club all about you, and I am right, aren't I? You are Julia Marlowe's son.
Julia Marlowe,
The actress, she played Barbara Fritchie for years.
She did. Well, I'm sorry, but there are no Fritchies in our families for years, either side.
Really, Matilda, Mr. Marlowe's busy. He was just leaving.
Yes, wasn't I?
Philip Fritchie Marlowe. Oh, it would have been a beautiful name.
The lights in Kip Harcourt's house were off when I got back to Pasadena. Those in Stevens' quarters above the garage were still on. It was better that way. I wasn't worried about Stevens' automatic anymore. There was a very good chance he wouldn't use it. Hey, Stevens, it's Marlowe. Open up.
Apparently, I didn't make myself clear, Mr. Marlowe, sir.
If you still want to try your aim when I finish talking, I'll be a willing target.
Come in, sir.
It's almost midnight. You're meeting Fritzy at noon tomorrow. We're going to have to work fast.
I warned you to stay out of it, Mr. Marlowe.
Now, listen, Stevens, hear this. I know about a lot of it, and I got some good guesses on the rest. Let's make a deal. I'll tell you what I know and what I guess. If I'm right, you can get in touch with Fritzy tonight.
And if you're wrong?
Well, if I'm wrong, one of us deserves to be killed.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Horace Caldwell was a wealthy man, a very wealthy man. He was a good businessman, and he loved his wife very much.
That's right, sir.
When he died, there was almost no money. A small amount, maybe, for Phoebe, but the house, everything in it, the cars, everything, went to pay off debts, liens against the estate.
What else do you know?
That Phoebe Caldwell contributed a wing to the Live Oak Museum. That she brought art treasures from all over the world to put in it, including the Sing Woo Jade collection. That the collection's been missing from the Caldwell wing since Christmas, 1947. Horace died of a cerebral hemorrhage in January 1948. And nobody wants to talk about who took the collection. Least of all, the people at the Live Oak Museum.
And what do you guess from all this, sir?
That a man, even a very wealthy man, can run out of money. Especially if he has a wife who's a wonderful woman with an eye and a hand for expensive art treasures. Phoebe's sick, Stevens. Kleptomania is an illness.
I know, sir. It's been such a well-guarded secret. It took all Mr. Horace had to pay for the things she took. People to watch her, keep track of her. You know her, sir. He couldn't bear to get help for her, psychiatric help. Now, she needs money, just to live on. She has so little and...
You love her very much, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, she can't have too many more years, Stevens, and $20,000 is a lot of money.
$20,000, Mr. Marlowe?
Now, look, Stevens. You've called it a well-guarded secret. Believe me, it was and it is. Even those of you who've been protecting Phoebe all these years haven't leveled with each other. How she moved the collection out of there, I'll never know, but the museum's had a $20,000 reward for its return for several years.
Well, I didn't know that, sir.
I know you didn't. And it suddenly dawns on me that Phoebe's been handing you the Sing Woo collection bit by bit ever since she, came by it. Maybe an appreciation for your years of faithful service, huh?
Well, she said it might come in handy, sir, if I ever needed money. If I needed money, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, I know, Stevens. Hey, you got a conflict tomorrow. You can't be here meeting Fritzy and be at the Live Oak Museum when it opens at noon, too.
Well, I'll call Fritzy. Tell him our arrangement is off.
And Stevens, can't you just see Percival Wallace's face tomorrow when he eyes the Sing Woo collection again? Footnote to a happy ending. By 12:30 Sunday afternoon, the museum had the collection, Stevens had a certified check for $20,000, and we had an understanding that Phoebe Cardwell would suddenly discover that Horace had left her some money after all. $20,000 in a checking account that had somehow been overlooked till now. Oh, well, the rest of Sunday was all mine. And I stood at my window and looked down on 1,000 inchworms playing Follow the Leader. Back from the beach, the mountains, from Aunt Millie's, from anywhere. All kinds of people. Nice people. Not so nice people. Dames like Kip, whose husbands took trips. Sweet, harmless old ladies. Who took collections. Oh, well, where's that book? Oh, yeah. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, here it is. She was the most breathtaking thing he'd ever seen. She lay back on the divan, stretched, and smiled languorously up at him.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and was written for radio tonight by Kathleen Height and Adrian Jeandot. Featured in the cast were Verna Felton, Bill Johnstone, and Lynn Allen, with Ann Morrison, Ralph Moody, Jerry Hausner, and Sidney Miller. Gerald Moore may soon be seen in the Santana production, Sirocco. The special music is composed by Pierre Garriganc and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Be sure and listen again next week at the same time when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a pair of green eyes held a promise. A house on Bedford Drive held a murder. A Malibu motel held a secret. And I almost held the sack.
Songbird Evelyn Knight, a favorite CBS singing star, helps out vocally on The Mario Lanza Show tomorrow evening on most of these same CBS stations. Stay tuned now for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS. Hear Horace Hyde every Sunday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.